Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The West has essentially declared all-out war on Russia. Instead of calling for a negotiated end to the conflict, Washington, London, and Brussels are looking to sustain the Ukrainian war effort. Thus, we need to ask, what is the West policy goal in all of this? Crosstalking escalation, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Maloof in Washington. He's a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. In Raleigh, we have Ray McGovern. He's a former CIA analyst. And in Bath, we have Bruce Gagon. He is a peace and justice activist. Crosstalk rules in effect, gentlemen, so that means you can jump in anytime you want. Okay, Michael, let me go to you first here. Ever since the conflict started on February 24th, there's been this whole mania about how we can help Ukraine. There's not much about talking about how to bring peace, okay? So what is the policy end here? Is there, have they thought about it? Because given recent history, they haven't thought about the law of unintended consequences. So is there a game plan here, or are they just winging it? Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think there is a game plan, and it's not to bring peace. I think and Ukraine is just a cog in this in a much larger strategic picture by the Biden administration and his neocons. What it really is not only to contain Russia, but now from what I gather, it is to overthrow the government in Moscow itself. That is the goal. But what it's also doing is trying to compete with what they see now emerging is a multipolar world order in which Moscow, Beijing, and other countries under the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, are forming their own independent multi-world order and as a consequence, and independent financial system. And that's important. And it's a challenge to that Western-dominated leadership and so-called dollar world currency that we're seeing. And this is threatening to the stability of the West. And we're already seeing cracks in the EU. We're seeing it in NATO. And certainly with the very weak leadership exhibited by President Biden, we see an effort now, an emphasis to use the Ukraine incident as a way to propel buildup of this multipolar world order, and it's not stopping. It's actually
if I go to Ray here, I agree with everything you say, but Ray, in the cards, I have to say, is the Third World War. I mean, you can't discount that. I mean, I remember the late Stephen Cohen was on my program many years ago, and he talked about this, and I kind of pushed back, but Stephen Cohen was right all along. Go ahead, Ray, because nuclear war is a possibility with this strategy that Michael so well laid out. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, picking up on what Michael and you have just said, Peter, there's been a Teutonic Freudian slip there. There's been a tectonic change in what the old Soviets used to call the world correlation of forces. Now, you can talk about a multipolar world, but it's really bipolar in both senses of the word, yeah. Right? It's the West, and I would add it's the White West, the White West, okay? Against China, against Russia, against India, against South Africa, against Britain. Give me a break. This is a new constellation of forces. It really is a tectonic shift. And worst of all, the people advising Biden seem no wiser on this than when they told him exactly a year ago that, oh, Russia's got this great big problem. China is squeezing Russia, and they have this long border. Russia's got this threat. Well, give me a break. It's 180 degrees away from that now. And China, after all, is Putin's insurance policy, okay? It's got a big brother now, Putin does. So even if his military campaign does not go as well as he expects, he can fall back on this major ally, and it is an ally now. And the reason China's an ally, not because it's best friends with Putin, but because it's next in line, for God's sake.
It's next in, exactly, next in line here. Bruce, I mean, as a peace activist, I mean, how do you see the administration's policy? Because, you know, they have, on the margins, they'll talk about, well, we'll give Zelensky all the room he needs to make a negotiated peace. But we've had this forum in Belarus. There was one in Turkey. All went nowhere. I had had a little, maybe it was foolish, but I wanted to have hope there was some kind of negotiated end could come. But they don't seem to be interested in that at all. As a matter of fact, they're more interested in pumping as much weaponry as possible into a country that has no hope of winning this military conflict at all. Bruce, go ahead.
Well, in the Rand Corporation study called Overextending and Unbalancing Russia that was published in 2019, they clearly lay out the program to destabilize Russia's borders, creating chaos, essentially burning down Ukraine to the ground in order to force, as they believe, regime change in Moscow. I think it's sick. It's dangerous. I've just learned that in the UK, U.S. nuclear weapons are going to go back into Lake and Heath Air Force Base. So it's pretty clear to me what the strategy is here, which is to destroy the Russian Federation, to allow the breakup of Russia into smaller countries so that the resource extraction corporations can grab Russia's vast resource base and at the same time destroy this momentum that's already been referred to of creating this multipolar world rather than having the U.S. Be Mr. Big of the planet. And so this is what we're facing now. It's the most dangerous moment in my life, and I'm really quite worried about it. And what you said about the possibility of going to World War III with nuclear weapons, I think it's very possible. It's conceivable. I think that Washington is desperate, and they're playing with fire.
Yeah, but Michael, I mean, you know the corridors of power here. I mean, the same people that designed the cakewalk, apparently, for Iraq, you know, and then we have Syria, we have Libya, we can go, you know, Yemen, we can go on and on. These are the same people. So, I mean, why would the outcome, tragedy, failure, be any different? Michael, explain to me.
Well, that's the problem. That's why we... Iraq, the invasion in 2003 was probably the beginning of the end, as far as I'm personally concerned, not just from me personally, but for that policy. It was almost a preemptive policy, and we're now seeing that started again. Look, if the Biden administration and the neocons, I would add, could be Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. They are so ensconced within our policy a formulation and decision-making system. It's like Victoria Nuland, for example, who's now the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, and her husband, who is Robert Kagan, the neocon of neocons. And that's a combination. And if the Biden administration truly wanted peace, they wouldn't have told Zelensky, just ignore the Minsk I, Minsk II agreements. They would stop the flow of arms in order for there to be a basis for a sit down for discussion and have a freezing of hostilities in place. That's not happening. And it just accentuates and reinforces this concern that we're expressing, of which a nuclear weapon exchange would be the ultimate, and that would be a disaster for the world.
You know, Ray, ever since the military operation started, all through Western media, you know, politicians, you know, wearing a Ukrainian flag on your lapel, or women doing their manicure in the flag, and all the in Congress walking around, were they wearing hoodies? I don't know what it was, okay? But this policy that the West is pursuing is not in the interest of the Ukrainian people because they're the ones on the short end of the stick of this here. It's never really talked about it in that way. And I find that horrific because unlike a lot of people that talk about Ukraine, I've been there many, many times. And it breaks my heart seeing all this quote unquote goodwill actually ending up in devastation, because this is a policy maneuver. And when whatever they get, they're just going to walk away and other people are going to have to pick up the pieces as usual. Ray, go ahead.
Well, I can identify. I've been in the Ukraine also, and I can identify with the suffering of the Ukrainian people. They are, oh, like so many other folks, like the Kurds, pawns of history. The U.S. could end this. Zelensky is desperately trying to get some more aid for what? So that it can be blown up by Russian forces? Zelensky is not his own man. He not only has the U.S. embassy to report to, but he cannot be a free agent because of the Nazis. And do not hesitate to acknowledge that
Thank you, Ray.
Folks.
Keep going on that issue, because they do not want to talk about it. They want to dismiss it. It's very real. Go ahead. 1 minute before we go to the break, Ray, please.
Well, the answer, of course, is that we need to push for an immediate ceasefire. That's not going to happen. Putin is going to go forward now with his plan to liberate Mariupol and the other parts of the eastern and southeastern Ukraine with the forces he has in place. Should he fail to do that, he can always count on China. And I will add this. It is not beyond possibility that China will stir up some trouble in the South China Sea or, of course, from Taiwan. I'm not saying they're going to invade Taiwan, but the prospect of a two-front war, are our neocon advisors so crazy as they would not realize that this is a real possibility now, which has not existed before, and that it needs to be avoided by any stratagem we can devise?
Well, that's because hegemony is being questioned. And this is something that Michael and I have talked about so many times. Instead of dealing with the world that it is, they want to deal with the world the way they want to make it here. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on escalation. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing escalation. Okay, Bruce, I want to go back to you and Beth. I mean, one of the things that's very important, I mean, I love to talk about geopolitics a lot, but if you don't mind, we could talk a little bit about domestic political discourse. This whole affair is brought about a new McCarthyism. If you say anything that we've said on this program, but you say in public, I can't imagine what will happen to you, because I've been completely canceled. My entire work on RT on YouTube has been deleted. I'm a non-person except for on my own platform here because of my opinions here. This is very, very dangerous here. Before February 24th, hardly anyone in America knew about Ukraine. Even fewer could find it. But now that it's a litmus test, go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I'm feeling it myself. Many of my friends are feeling it as well. This new McCarthyism, I think it's the right way to describe it. If you say the wrong thing, you get deplatformed. We've seen Scott Ritter kicked off Twitter just in recent time. And it's getting worse all the time. And even the so-called peace movement is extremely divided now, with essentially between the anti-imperialist and the liberal Democrats. I think the liberal Democrats are coming out like fierce attack dogs, trying to protect their president, trying to protect their narrow and shrinking future in the House and the Senate. So it's really getting nasty. But I think this is what the ruling oligarchs in the West want. They want divided U.S., they want divided Europe, because through that division, they're able to control and move forward with these steps towards a world war, as they're cutting back on human needs spending and increasing military spending in all of these places. And it is indeed a war on the global South. Anyone that dares stand up in the other parts of the world, that refuses to attack and vilify and sanction Russia and China, it's really a harsh time. One thing I'm really interested in seeing is, as the steel facilities there in Mariupol near the port are liberated from the Nazis, it's going to be interesting to see how many NATO military officers and enlisted people, retired military people from NATO countries come pouring out of there. With these efforts to rescue some of these unknown people, I think it really shows, again, this sign of desperation on the part of U.S. NATO. They're really worried about the people around the world finding out this is actually a NATO war against Russia. There's no doubt about it. NATO directed, NATO trained, NATO funded, NATO armed, and growing by the day.
You know, I'm glad that Bruce brought that up, Michael, because when I look at news coverage over the last 6 weeks or so, the fact that Russia was against NATO expansion just barely makes it in to the dialogues of some of these conversations I see on cable TV. I'm thinking of like Douglas McGregor that will mention it, okay? Aaron Maté will mention it. Max Blumenthal, Greenwald will mention it. But everybody else, it's everything is out of context. Everything has no context. Nothing happened before February 24th. And that is the problem with the way Western publics are being told about this conflict. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, that's the reason, that's the problem and the failure of the West not to read history, because there were agreements to that effect. There are at least a half a dozen of them to respect indivisibility of not to increase the strength in the West at the expense of the East. And that included movements of NATO and the word of three presidents, totally ignored. But because they were just agreements and just a word assurances, they can easily be broken. And we saw that even with the creation of the Ukraine itself as a sovereign nation in 1990. It was supposed to remain non-aligned, and that was in their charter, in the document that they signed to be independent. And then it was only in 2017 that they opted to put the NATO, joining of NATO into their constitution. And that was, again, at the pressure of Washington because of what happened in 2014 by Victoria Nuland and then Vice President Joe Biden.
Just to point out to our viewers, in February 2014, there was an illegal overthrow of the democratically elected government in Ukraine. And Ray, if I can go to you, again, we're fighting for democracy in Ukraine, and nobody wants to mention that there was a democracy there. As fragile as it was for Ukraine, it was there. But no one wants to talk about that, the antecedent to what's going on right now. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, Peter, because it doesn't appear in the New York Times or the Washington Post or on any of the cable channels. Yeah, it was the most blatant coup in history, advertised on YouTube, of all places, 18 days before it happened. Okay, that was February 22nd, 2014. That's what started all this stuff most recently. So if people don't know that, and I have to tell you that the main problem, as you pointed out, is the malnourishment of the American people. They tend to believe all this stuff. I have former colleagues, astute analysts, who buy the butcher a butcher, you know, the butcher massacre, without agreeing that, hey, there really ought to be an investigation, don't you think? No, you don't know of it. So it's gotten pretty bad. And more important, Putin looks on at this, and he sees, as he has said many times, and he knows from personal experience, presidents are not their own person. They're not their own men, so to speak, okay? So he's had experience with Obama. They worked out a ceasefire for 11 months in Syria. And 8 days later, the U.S. Air Force raided Syrian fixed positions. So when Putin looks at Biden, and he has said this, he says, U.S. foreign policy is hostage, Putin's word, hostage to domestic requirements in the political scene in the U.S. What does that mean? We have the midterms coming up in November. nothing's going to happen except that Biden needs to show his strength. So he'll pour more arms, $800 million worth of arms into Ukraine. They'll get blown up by the Russians. Who will get blamed? The Russians, of course, because they blew out these arms. Now, the only people profiting from this, of course, are the people who make the arms, who sell the arms, and cash in on this $800 million. And that's the Mickey Man, the military industrial congressional intelligence media academia think tank complex. It's much worse than it was under Eisenhower. Well,
a compliment to you, Ray, is that many, many people use that acronym right now. You're the only one that can say it, though. Everyone else can write it. Okay. Bruce, I mean, one of the things that, if we could bring a little bit closer to the U.S., you know, it's almost a form of nation building that they want to talk about Ukraine. As, you know, working people in America, the middle classes in America continue to be devastated here. You know, an $800 million, another $800 million. I mean, why can't we put that into education or health care? I mean, I'm just astounded how these people can print money for these nefarious reasons and just say, and you're going to have to suffer as a result. Why should they suffer? These wars make people suffer. And now it's come to the West. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, it was interesting recently to see large protests in Spain as people are out on the streets because of increasing inflation and gasoline prices. I think that's going to spread. And I think ultimately it's going to spread here in the U.S. as well. Biden is talking about the Putin price hikes, trying to blame all of his domestic economic failures on Russia. But I don't think in the end that's going to really wash. I think the American people, clearly they're brainwashed. Clearly they're uneducated about all of this stuff. Clearly the American people know nothing about Ukraine, nor the Donbass, nor the 8 years of shelling by the Nazi-led Ukrainian army of the people in the Donbass. I've been to Lugansk and Donetsk. I've seen the graves. I've seen the burned out buildings as a result of these shells. And I can tell you, when I came back from there and I tried to organize people in this country, in the United States, to speak out against what the U.S. and NATO were supporting these attacks on the Donbass, I couldn't find anybody that wanted to pay any attention. But now suddenly they're all experts on Ukraine with their Ukrainian flags. So it's going to come home here. It already is hitting home, and it's going to get a lot worse, no doubt about it.
You know, Michael, I'd like to end. The Global South has already been mentioned on this program, which I think is very important. When I think of countries like India and Saudi Arabia, you know, Saudi Arabia has its own regime type, as unfortunate as it is, but it is a sovereign country. And so you have Blinken telling everybody what to do that violates their sovereignty and their interests, okay? I mean, hegemony just knows no bounds, okay? I mean, and this is, I think the Global South, this is a pivot point. It's time to turn away, get away from the dollar, get away from this rules-based order, whatever that means, because no one's ever explained it to me. I think this is an inflection point. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, well, this is what you're seeing is that leaders, that so-called leadership, it's Blinken and others within this administration that still thinks the West can call all the shots, and that's going away. The dollar itself is going to go away as a world currency. It's fiat currency. It's not backed by anything. It's paper. It's green paper. Unlike the ruble now, which is going to be backed by commodities and gold, what we're going to see is this new trend in which you're going to see the demise of the dollar as a so-called world currency. And we're already seeing where oil is going to be purchased in local currency. So this is a new trend, and it can accelerate very, very rapidly. And just as Saudi Arabia goes and the UAE goes, so will all the other Arab countries. They're going to go the same route, even though they have relationships with the U.S., but that could easily and quickly diminish as they watch Saudi Arabia venture more toward China and Russia, because that's where the real money is. And not the fake money.
Yeah, people want real value, not rules-based order. whatever that means. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Raleigh, and in Bath. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.